Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. Thanks for coming by this morning. You know, every day when I do the research that I use for the show, and in the hopes that I'm helping people find out things that will help them in some way, I, of course, come across lots of things that really hurt me, really hurt my heart, make me wonder what we're thinking and what's going on with the rest of the world. I mean, we talk about a lot about how much we're all so much alike, and yet I could never do some of the things that I see being done by other people on a daily basis. Today, first of all, I want to mention there's not much to discuss about this, but I do think it bears mention, and I do think that we need to touch base on it. And that is, in North Carolina, a little boy named Michael was. He likes, apparently, he's 11, and apparently he likes My Little Pony cartoons and the My Little Pony toys that you can buy. They're adorable. They remind me of the old Walt Disney movie Fantasia, where everything is beautiful and I don't know, just kind of dreamy and floaty and pastel colors. And I remember taking the neighborhood boys with me, by the way, way back in the early 50s, to see Fantasia at the movie theater. And it was a cartoon that was like an operetta, and it was beautiful. And you left in a state of dreamy infatuation with what could be. There was nothing about it that was boy or girl. There was nothing about it that today, now we talk about girl flicks and guy flicks and all this kind of stuff. This was just beautiful. And if you were a young child, it helped you with your imagination. I suspect that that's what happens when some young kids who, especially little boys, who are in touch a little bit with their feminine side. I'm not saying somebody that is born gay or something like that. That's a whole other conversation, and we've had it many times. I'm talking about somebody who appreciates that. Who do you think Walt Disney was? You know, and these shows were his idea. Or how about the famous puppeteer Henson? I know his family, and their imagination takes people to a wonderful place. So here's this little boy who appreciates the fantasy of these ponies, and they are adorable. I mean, if you see them in the store, they catch your eye. They're pastel, they're sparkly, they're magical ponies. What's not to like about them? What, because you're a boy, you shouldn't like them? Well, that's really a load of crap. That's really, really a load of crap. So this little boy, because he doesn't feel like he should be embarrassed about it, obviously, and he shouldn't have been, he shares it with kids in school. So the kids in school picked on him terribly. And apparently there is a side of My Little Pony that has an audience of men and boys known as bronies. Now, I wasn't able to find out anything else about what that means, but it is in the article I read. And so this little boy believed in what these little ponies believe, that friendship is magic. What a beautiful thing. A lot of people have donated money since all of this happened. This little boy came home and hung himself. Again, every time I hear something like this, I'm like, oh, how did they even think of doing that? But he did. His parents came home and found him, and they have him in a hospital, but he was without oxygen for quite a long time. And mom even comments that he was always dancing. So he, you know, God knows he could have been another Walt Disney. He could have been, he could have been somebody that made us smile and laugh and appreciate the fantasies that are in everybody's imaginations. Beautiful, remember the one part in Fantasia where you're on this, like, spring of water and these lily pads open up and there's these beautiful little cherubs inside the lily pads. I loved this. The boys that were the same age as me, one was older, one was the same age as me. They were my next door neighbors, and we were very, very good friends. The three of us watched this and loved it. Loved it. Nobody said anything about these two guys, and these two guys grew up to be married. One of them fought in Vietnam. Come on. So anyway, There's some stuff going on for Michael Maroney's, and I have it on my Facebook page if you have any interest to donate to the family who is trying to survive this. He's on a ventilator, and he is his parents have a fund set up through the State Employees Credit Union of the Michael Maroney's Recovery Fund. And it's all on my Facebook page. So please, if you are in a place where you can do something like that, I'm sure it would be appreciated. So that brings me on to the other part of today's story, which is just as sad, but all for different reasons. And this is about a man who got involved with bath salts. I don't know how many of you are aware of what bath salts are. So I decided we should do a show that explains this horrible, it's being called a designer drug, and I think that we should discuss it at length and talk about the latest incident. I'm going to bring in Shelley so she can participate in all of this conversation. Good morning, Shel.
Good morning, Renee.
How are you?
Yeah, that's not a nice way to wake up. Wow.
I know.
Yeah, now, that little boy, before we continue, the little boy, Michael Maroney, what state did you say that was in? I missed that.
I think it's in North Carolina.
Okay, that's what I thought you said, but then I went to write it down and I wasn't sure. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's pretty tragic. One of the things that's before we get into the story about the man, what I've been seeing a lot of lately, especially down here in Florida, and I don't mean any insult to anybody, but it is a state full of rednecks. I mean, a lot of the southern states have that mentality, and not all rednecks are of this mindset, but a lot of them are. And I hear a lot of men talking about their sons in ways that certain things are masculine and certain things aren't masculine and certain things are okay and certain things aren't okay for a boy to like or not to like. And sometimes I've overheard these comments and they've incited me, but, you know, it's not my family, it's not my kid, I can't say anything about it, you know. But they're really brought up with unhealthy attitude towards what's okay for a guy to like or not to like. You know, some completely virile heterosexual men are sensitive, and it's okay to be sensitive, and it's okay to like ponies and things like that. So a lot of men have a warped idea about what being a man and being masculine is all about, and it's not all men, But it is pretty prevalent nowadays that there's just not a healthy attitude towards what being masculine is. And it really needs to go through a shift. And yet, other times they meet men that are completely comfortable with their masculinity, don't mind showing sensitivity, you know, big guys, you know, gentle giants, you know, they're very sweet. They couldn't hurt a fly. And then, I would like to see that come out more, because that's actually a stronger male personality. When you know that you have the wherewithal about you to take care of your family, to be brave and all that, and yet at the same token, you can show sensitivity and kindness. That's actually a stronger male role model than the guy who acts macho and kind of jerky all the time.
Mm-hmm. Well, and like I said, there are a lot of amazing people out there that have shown us, like Walt Disney, like Jim Henson. I'm drawing a blank for other names, but those two, I think, have changed the world with their imaginations. And of course, there's all the organizations that work at Disney World now that do things that are all about imagination. And all the shows that are on television, some of them I think are silly, and some of them I think are too immature for some of the kids, and some of them I think are downright dumb, so I have mixed emotions about some, but it's still about your personal imagination, and that has nothing to do with your virility. Nothing.
That's right.
Nothing,
that's
nothing,
right.
Nothing. Look at
I
how
actually
many,
saw on one of my court shows, and then we'll switch subjects, but I actually saw on one of my court shows the other day that this man was in court because he and his wife were divorced, and the son wanted to be in gymnastics, and the father, like, lost his mind over that because he said no man gets into gymnastics. It's a girl's sport. And he tried to prevent his son from going into gymnastics. Meanwhile, look at gold medalists. These guys have bodies like iron. It's a grueling sport. You really have to be in good shape, very powerful. And yet this numbnut thought that gymnastics was for girls only. I mean, how uneducated and ignorant is that?
Mm-hmm. Well, and you see that a lot, and you see that, they take real-life situations, and we see that on a lot of the things that we watch on TV, so we know that that really exists out there.
Those are the real people. They're not actors or actresses. They go on, it isn't a reenactment, so it's not true to life. It's the actual people.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I know, but I'm saying, because even if you haven't seen anything like that, you know that a lot of the shows that we watch are based on what everybody hears and sees in real life. So they make, well, like the Law and Orders, like the and now there's so many things on TV, like the show that we did about the hoarders and stuff like that. Fact is often more mysterious than fiction anyway. I want to read real quick, though. I got, when I posted this, I did get some comments, and I want to share one. It's from somebody who is pretty close to me, and she's raised kids and things like that, so she's not living in la-la land. She's aware of what's going on out there. But she says, and I agree with this, kids hear about other kids' suicides, and being kids, think it's the only way to get away from the bullying. Kids don't understand how permanent death is. We all know that, but there should be someone these kids can go to when this bullying is happening. Most times, having a parent contact the school just leads to further nasty bullying. I'd enjoy hearing from anyone who has ideas about how to fight this. So, Sherry does listen to the show and listens to the recordings later in the day a lot of times. So she, you can tell by some of the things she's written here that she understands that the interference from parents often leads to bigger problems. But I like the part about kids hear about other kids' suicides. And I've talked about that at length, and I do believe that, very sadly, that's one of the things that that pushes them to these kind of decisions, because, if they see it, And if they, you know, they can't help but mimic some of the things that they see other people doing, and they think it's the right answer. So, and when you're, you know, that age, so I don't know whether they're talking about suicide in school these days. I've never read anything that tells me that they do touch on suicide. I know that they have grief counselors. If it happens at a school, I'm sure there's grief counselors here in North Carolina helping the other kids that were Michael's age deal with this. But suicide, I think Sherry says in it, they don't understand the fact that suicide means you don't change anything, you're just gone.
Right.
So maybe that is one of the things that really needs to be amplified, you know. This is, you know, cause, and we've talked about this so many times before. We'll go way back to Tom and Jerry or The Roadrunner and Wile E. Coyote or even older shows that you watch where Iron Man gets destroyed and this happens and that happens. And then, you know, you're 8 years old and 3 hours later you watch another movie and here's that same guy. So death doesn't mean a damn thing.
Right. Right.
You know, because you're not intellectually able to separate all the facts there. The fact that it is a movie, the fact that it's pretend, even though I think most parents tell kids, you know, this is a movie, this is entertainment, this can't really happen. And a lot of little kids lose grandparents at a fairly young age, and I think at some point in time it sinks in that they never get to see grandma and grandpa again, that when they die that means that they're really gone. There is no other opportunity to see them. So I think some of them get it, but not all of them. And I do think it's something that I don't know whether it would help or not, because if a kid is so far down in the dumps that that's all he can think of doing, maybe nothing will help by that time. I don't know. I'd hate to think that that would
be wondering if a lot of them, like you said, if they have any concept that this is a finality, or if sometimes they think they're pressing the reset button, like you said, like in a game, and if they take this action, they're going to wake up from it, and all of a sudden everything's going to be better.
Right.
I'm wondering how many
yeah.
of them think that, and they're not actually trying to end their life, but they're trying to end their suffering, thinking that somehow
exactly.
this made a change, a dramatic change somehow.
Well, and I think that last sentence you said is the answer. They don't think that they're ending everything. They're just ending the problem. You know, they think that this will get the kind of attention that's needed so that somebody can stop this from happening to them.
Right, right.
So, anyway, it is on my Facebook page. If anybody is in a place where they can help this family, I think that would be a wonderful thing to do. And we're going to send out some really, really, really strong prayers and energy to hope that just like Jahai, the other little girl that we're all thinking about every day, maybe this is the right idea. Maybe just keeping them in a place until the rest of their body repairs itself. We are magnificent machines, so maybe something will happen. And if you don't believe in something, it becomes irrelevant. So I think believing in it and praying for it sometimes makes it come true. So now the next thing that I want to talk about, and this is horrendous, this is really, really horrendous. There was an attack, I believe it was earlier this week or at the end of last week, maybe even on the weekend. I didn't find any bona fide dates. But here in South Florida, a very large, about 6'2", 250-pound black man, naked, was running through the streets and was just randomly attacking people, grabbing them like he was just kind of like out of his mind. And five different people he went after. And one was a 10-year-old boy. And there didn't seem to be any kind of recognizable, I don't know, decorum to his attack. Nobody antagonized him. He seemed to be at a place where he didn't even realize where he was, what he was doing or anything. Totally out of control and in a place where he didn't have any idea what he was doing. So police showed up. People started calling from cell phones, and finally all the police showed up, and they tried to get his attention, and he would just like rampage, like a rampaging elephant. You know, the stories we read about when elephants are so docile and beautiful and they're this and that, but when they go cuckoo, they go cuckoo, you know?
Right.
And that's what this man was doing. And when he saw the cops, he turned around and took this stance, like, okay, who's next, kind of a stance, according to the article I read. And they tasered him. And the tasers didn't even make him stumble, didn't subdue him in any way. So they drew guns, and he just charged. And they shot him 5 times before they got him down on the ground, 5 times. And he died in the hospital. So the outcome of this is that they believe that he was under the influence of bath salts. Now, I did a lot of research. I went to a lot of different sites to find out what I could, and probably the most descriptive and the easiest article to understand was the one that I'm going to share with everybody today. And it's awful, and nobody's going to like it, that's for sure. But you know that I guess it's been like 2 years now since the man under the turnpike was eating the other man's face. You remember that story?
Yeah.
And but there have been other incidents, but nothing as bad as the first one and nothing as bad as this one. But here's the article, and then we're going to talk a little bit about this. And if there's anybody out there listening that has any input about bath salts or any experience with bath salts, I've asked around a lot, even to some people that I know who are a little bit experimental and do things like this on occasion, and it is what it is. Nobody that I know has ever had anything to do with this because of that first incident. It was too scary. But if you're out there and you have any firsthand experiences, maybe not yourself, but somebody you know or somebody that you have witnessed, we'd be interested in hearing about that. Can the headlines really have it right? Is there really a new drug that makes people so violent that they can bite each other's faces off? I wish this was a News of the World headline that we could all dismiss, along with the stories of alien babies and women giving birth at 95. But in this case, the headlines do have it right, sort of. Yes, unfortunately, there's a new drug making its way into communities across the country, and it's really, really scary. How scary? Well, in the incident described in the current headlines, a 31-year-old man, Rudy Eugene of Miami, attacked a 65-year-old homeless man, stripped off all of his clothes, dived on top of him, and started chewing off his face. Eugene had a history of run-ins with police and had been accused of domestic violence, but his history hadn't suggested a risk of public violence. The explanation, if there is one, seems to be that bath salts can trigger a full-blown psychotic episode with extreme delusions. Who knows what type of hallucination would lead someone to eat another person's face, but you can imagine it would have to be pretty extreme and a vivid one. Reports from onlookers characterized Eugene as a zombie, behaving as if he were under the control of some evil specter. So what are bath salts, and how did the drug get this ridiculously misleading name? Like ecstasy and methamphetamine, the drug known as bath salts is a designer drug, which means it's synthetic, concocted in a lab. On the street, it's also called bath powder, herbal incense, or plant food. What makes the term bath salts more confusing, though, is that the name is used for a surprisingly large number of different chemical combinations. To understand what the drug does, think of bath salts as a cross between meth and acid. Well, sort of. Like cocaine, meth, and speed, bath salts work by stimulating the central nervous system, kicking it into overdrive, if you will. But the drug also apparently causes paranoid delusions and or hallucinations. Experts are saying it's psychoactive rather than hallucinogenic like acid, but at the end, results appears to be similar. Delusional beliefs acted upon in a violent way. The key ingredients that go into bath salts are the synthetic compounds MDPV-3,4-methylenedioxypyrovalerone. Say that three times fast. Methadrone, priloverlone, pyrovalerone, and methylone. But there are many other ingredients used in addition to these or in place of them. For example, many of the bath salts seized have been found to contain extremely high levels of caffeine. MDPV and methadrone and the most common bath salts originated as synthetic versions of natural ingredient found in CAT, K-H-A-T, it's Katha edulis, a hallucinogenic plant found in eastern Africa. Cathinone, the active ingredient in that, or in CAT, sorry, is a Schedule I controlled substance, meaning illegal. However, MDPV and methadrone were legal until fall of 2011 when an FDA banned them. But underground chemists keep skirting the law by slightly altering the chemical compounds to come up with new versions that are technically legal. Ay, ay, ay. The FDA now refers to bath salts as designer drug of the phenethylamine class. Slang names for methadrone include meth, drone, and MCAT. I don't know whether that's pronounced MCAT or just the letters. It's in big capital letters, but no period, so it must be MCAT. Yikes, where did bath salts come from? Currently, the chemicals we call bath salts are frequently manufactured and imported from China and Europe, but drug officials say it's only a matter of time before the American drug cookers begin making them. The history of bath salts is both fascinating and frightening. The drug was actually first formulated in France in the 20s, but disappeared until it was rediscovered from the obscurity of academia by an underground chemist. He published the recipe on a website known as The Hive, which was shut down in 2004 for sharing way too much info about illegal substances. But the word was out, and the drug became extremely popular all over Europe. It might be interesting to those in the pharmaceutical and chemical fields to note that bath salts were legal in Israel starting around 2004, sold under the name Hagagat, H-A-G-I-G-A-T, Hagagat. Once declared illegal, the cathinone was modified and another Israeli company, Neorganics, sold the drug as pills and liquids under several names, including Neodoves, until the Israeli government specifically made methadrone illegal in 2008. So, big story.
What are the positive symptoms? I mean, why would somebody take this to begin with? Is it, like you said, it's not hallucinogenic. So what are the positive things that somebody would feel initially that would make them want to try this?
Well, this next little article may answer that to a degree, but it's not what you would think. It's not as enticing as you would think. In the UK, various drugs in the bath salts category have become a serious problem, passed out like candy at music festivals and easily available at head shops and on the street. They're now listed just behind marijuana, ecstasy, and cocaine as the fourth most popular street drug. Now, this is in the UK. Bath salts are cheap, innocent-looking, easy to obtain, and many people think they're legal, or at least know they're unlikely to be caught and prosecuted for using them. Bath salts come in little packets with soothing names like Blue Silk, Bliss, Vanilla Sky, and Ivory Wave, and cost just $25 to $60 a packet. According to one website, some have much scarier sounding names like Crazy Train, White Slut, Eight Balls. Bath salts can be smoked, snorted, or injected. The initial symptoms are positive, including relaxation, euphoria, and a sense of warmth and well-being, similar to ecstasy. But pretty quickly, a darker side of the drug kicks in. The symptoms of being dangerously high on bath salts include, but aren't limited to, extreme paranoia, elevated heart rate, blood pressure, and pulse, extremely high body temperature, sleep deprivation, vivid hallucinations, hostility or aggression, strange eye movements, extreme sweating, panic attacks, and suicidal thoughts. Oddly, given the list of symptoms above, there's also reports of side effects that has an intense desire to use the drug again. In other words, it's highly addictive. Overdoses of bath salts can quickly turn into emergencies because of the lack of knowledge about the drug, because bath salts is a collective term for a bunch of different ingredients, but there's no test to determine if someone took the drug. The only way to know for sure is if the user admits to what they took. Now, that's a very interesting paragraph.
Wow.
With all those things in there.
Many different formulations now. There's not a single test to find out for bath salts because there's too many different formulas out there that all fall under that category. Is that what they're saying?
Yeah, and maybe they all break up. Maybe they're all such minute fragments of each one of the things that I read off before. Maybe once they get into the bloodstream and they separate, maybe that's part of the problem, too. Maybe they're so far-reaching once they separate.
No,
maybe
once they're in the bloodstream, they're together. But one of the things I've learned...
How do you know that? How do you know that?
Well, because I've watched these forensic shows. But what happens is a lot of times the problem is not that it's not in the bloodstream anymore, although there are some that are very difficult to detect. The problem is that a lot of chemicals cannot be detected unless you do a specific test to detect it. So if they don't know what they're looking for, they're not going to do the appropriate test. It's not just like it's not going to show up on a regular CBC, in other words. That's the point.
Well, that's what I'm, saying. So
and they don't do the exact right test, they're not going to see them.
Okay, but because there's so many ingredients, that's what I'm saying. Maybe there's a separation of ingredients. So if you can't go in, there's no test that says this is going to test for bath salts because
right.
of all of everything that's in the recipe. The recipe is, like, unbelievable. You heard all the things that I read that are in it. So what happens is obviously because there's no test, well, it's like marijuana. Marijuana is marijuana. I mean, people put additives in it, but you can find it pretty easy. Heroin is heroin. That's what makes it so scary, and that's why they call it a designer drug, because it's a recipe that people are following and putting all these off-the-wall chemicals, not plant foods, but chemicals into this. So it makes it a whole different story.
One of the symptoms you just read, I was waiting to hear. I was pretty sure that was going to be one of the side effects because you hear these people that get really violent and they're always naked. It's because their body temperature gets to be so high that they can't even stand the touch of any clothing against their skin.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard of this before as an inspiration from drug use, that their body temperature gets so elevated that they can't handle having anything touch their skin.
Mm-hmm. Well, and this is a part of the bath salt crimes that have been committed or the bath salt situations that our policemen and other people have witnessed. There was one story that I didn't want to read because it sounded like something from, I don't know, the other side. It's called Zombies. And that's how they even described this man this man who attacked all these people is zombie-like because there's no connection, no connectivity in his eyes, in his face. It's like he's, you know, like the movies that we've seen of zombies where they're going around eating people. So that's how they're describing them. And always they shed all their clothing, always. So bath salts are absurdly easy to get a hold of. They're sold in head shops all over the country and even behind the counters in many convenience stores. Oh, my God. Reports of violence associated with bath salts have been confused by the use of different names for the drug compounds. But those who've taken them report feeling that they've experienced pure evil. Here are just a few of the episodes reported around the country. California. Two 15-year-old boys fell violently ill and developed small holes in their lungs after consuming methadone, which they thought was MDMA. The drug was sold to them by a student at a nearby college. Colorado, a drug called alpha-PVP, a type of bath salt, led to a young man's death by strangulation when friends tried to restrain him during a violent fit. Washington, investigators believe that a double murder-suicide in which a man killed his wife and 5-year-old son then shot himself. They believe bath salts was involved in that. Louisiana, a 21-year-old Louisiana man slit his throat in front of his family after he snorted bath salts because he believed police were after him. Pennsylvania, police arrested a couple high on bath salts who had nearly cut their 5-year-old daughter with a knife, which they were using to stab the 90 people they believed were living in the walls of their apartment.
Wow.
Kentucky, a prison guard off duty reportedly high on bath salts was cited for 10 different acts of violence in 2 different towns and ultimately had to be tasered. West Virginia, a man high on bath salts was found wandering in the woods in lingerie after he allegedly stabbed a goat. Indiana, a man committed suicide after telling his family for weeks that the FBI were following him and watching him eat. Ohio, a young man was fatally shot after he held a knife to his girlfriend's neck. California, 2 recent suicides have been attributed to bath salts. Police around the country say they're seeing a spike in domestic violence and assault cases connected with bath salts. Is bath salts an epidemic? No, nowhere close. The real drug epidemic is oxycodone, which is now the second highest cause of accidental death in the U.S., behind car accidents. But what's scary about bath salts is how the drug seems to have appeared out of nowhere and how fast it's taking hold. In the past year, the number of calls to poison control centers about bath salts has increased more than 20 times. According to the American Association of Poison Control Centers, from 304 reports in 2010 to 6,138 in 2011. According to the FDA, no reports of the drug surfaced until 2009, during which the FDA reported 2 cases. By the following year, there were more than 300 cases, and last year the number had tripled to over 900 cases. That's a tiny number, to be sure. But those most often using the drugs are kids and teens whose brains and central nervous systems are still developing. In fact, experts say the drugs are marketed directly to kids with cartoon characters on the colorful packages. So we have a drug that's easily available, inexpensive, innocent-sounding, and profoundly addictive. Doesn't that sound like we're going to have a serious new drug problem on our hands in a few years? Yes, I would say so. I would say so. So for those of you that are out there who are worried about this, you have seen some of these side effects. You've witnessed something that makes you believe that this might be going on. There is no test that you can do, evidently. There is, I'm assuming, if they do some kind of a blood test and pick up some of the derivatives that we talked about today, then they can make an educated assumption about what is going on. But unlike some of the other things that, you know, like remember years ago, it wasn't so easy to check if somebody was sniffing glue, but their face would have marks on it once they were doing extended snuffing or sniffing or whatever they called it back then.
Yeah, I think it was called huffing.
Say that again.
Huffing with an H.
Huffing.
H-U-F-F-I-N-G. It was called Huffing.
Yes. And but you'd see like the peeling and the burning around their noses and their mouth and everything. So there's always been lots of different ways to find out exactly what a kid was doing. This, evidently, you don't see that. So I have a couple questions, though, and I'm going to follow up on this, and I'm going to get some answers for us. And that is one something that I feel very strongly about. If we know that it's being sold in convenience stores, evidently, like 7-Elevens and places like that, or some of these little mom-and-pop places that are on side streets in some of our bigger cities, then why? Why isn't there troops of people going out and taking them off the counters? Why isn't there some kind of a mass program to, you know, it's one thing when it's being done, covertly, when there's people standing on the corner with these little packets. Isn't it, I just had this terrible thought. Isn't it funny or amusing? No, it's neither one of those. Isn't it distressing to find out that the little boy that we just talked about, who is enamored by the mystical, magical ponies and all their beautiful pastel colors and all that kind of stuff, and this is how they're packaging such a horrific drug?
I know. Well, because it goes to the innocence of children. You know, that's why drug pushing and the whole drug industry is so parasitical and vicious and sadistic, because it's just all about the money, and they have no concern with what's going to happen to the person they get addicted. They just want a bunch of addicted people out there, and they don't care what society does to itself as a result. They just want to reap the rewards. It sounds ridiculous, but even at a very young age, that was one of the things that prevented me from even trying drugs, because I had I'm talking about like at 9, 10 years old, I had this attitude that I didn't want to be part of any industry that caused harm. And I recognized at a really young age that the drug industry was violent, that it committed murders and was behind child pornography. And I don't know why I realized these things at such a young age, but it's actually what prevented me from ever trying drugs.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think some of us, first of all, if you're raised a certain way, you don't want to get in trouble. There's that. And then there's also the fact that some of us, I know me, the first time I drank a few beers, no, let me go back to the very first story. I just turned 18, and I went to the Ithaca Hotel. There was a big band. We all sat at this big, fancy, it had in its heyday, the Ithaca Hotel was like this really amazing place where all the high rollers went, and then it kind of got run down, and it was no longer this amazing place. It was just an old hotel with big, ornate furniture and everything, and we'd all go there and hang out. And before I drank, I went there all the time because there would be a band. But it was my birthday, and all my friends wanted to buy me a drink, and we're sitting at like a round table that seated like 16 people. It was a huge round table. And I ordered a Manhattan. Don't even ask why I thought of a Manhattan. I don't even remember my parents drinking Manhattans. I guess I just thought it was a very classy thing to order now that I'm a big, big girl at 18. So the guy brings me a Manhattan with a little jigger of more Manhattan in it. Now, if you know anything about Manhattans, it's just straight booze with a cherry in it, for God's sakes. And what made me think I could handle all that, I don't know. But
I didn't even know that. I never had a Manhattan. But continue.
Yeah. And so I drank them. We were all laughing, and the music had sort of started but not really started, so we hadn't even stood up by the time I'd had three of them, which was actually sick little Manhattan glasses with all this straight booze in it, right? I go to stand up to go to dance. I almost fell right on my face on the table. I mean, literally, my body almost went floop right on the top of the table. And until I stood up, I didn't even know anything was wrong. Well, it saved my butt. It really saved my butt. Because even though I did my share of drinking as a young woman, and even when we owned the bar and stuff like that, I never wanted to feel like that again. Yeah. Never. Yeah. I never wanted to lose complete control. And that's not to say that I haven't, because I would be, that would be a lie, because I have lost control, but I don't like it. And that taught me a lot, that little episode. And so I never tried drugs. I never smoked weed. I never did any of those kind of things, because I thought, if I can get so stupid on three Manhattans, and by that time I knew how stupid I could get on five or six beers, I was like, oh no, and drugs will never be for me, because I won't be able to deal with them.
Right.
So
when I was 16, and probably that's the same thing with me, is I had gone to a party, all of my friends, I was in sports, we were on field hockey and softball together and stuff, and there was a party at one of the girls' house, and everybody was drinking. We were all like 16 years old, and everybody was drinking. The mother of this young girl thought that was the cool thing to do. So I ended up drinking. Now, I had never drank before in my life. I had a six-pack of beer. I drank champagne. I even was smoking. I smoked like probably 10 cigarettes that night. I never smoked either. And by the next morning, I was sick as a dog, and I had to get up and work in my yard, and I didn't want anybody to know what I had done. So I got up at like 5:30 the next morning and went out to work in the yard anyway, because that's what my parents expected me to do, and I felt like I was dying.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And I had no choice, but I was so messed up. And like you said, I didn't like the way I felt. And in my head, I'm going, why do these girls do? Because they were doing this like almost every week. They would have these parties where they would just get drunk, and I didn't like it. And I never did it again. I was at one party. I never did it again until I didn't start drinking again until I was 18. But
I have a name for a party like that, because I've been a few of those myself, and they're called Hell in a Handbasket Party.
Mm.
Because, you know, you will never forget it, and you always regret it, and it just, you know, and you can go either way, though, after that. You can, you can fall into that basket, hook, line, and sinker, or you can say, I'm never getting in that basket again. So it's a deal breaker for sure, or a deal maker. So, but this,
you know, going
bath
back
salt,
to this drug, I did want to mention one thing, because it's kind of on topic with what we're talking about. The other night on the news, and this is very scary, whether you're talking about bath salts or anything else. There is an upsurge of heroin in South Florida, and they had it on the news the other day. I forgot to watch it. I saw it on the commercial, and then I forgot to watch the actual report, so I guess we could Google it. But there's an upsurge of heroin in South Florida, but it's a different formula. They're constantly screwing with these to make them more powerful and this and that, so, you know, they can market them. It's like any other product, you know. And they said that it's stronger than any other heroin ever before, but the negative, dangerous side effects are like tenfold, and that there's actually, it's causing murders and suicides. And it's like, it astonishes me that so many of these drugs today don't just get people high, they turn them into psychotic killing machines. And I don't understand why people don't get the potential violence and steer clear of this. You know, you want to get high, you want to get drunk and not get out of your room, that's one thing. But why, I don't understand the draw to people trying things that could potentially turn them into homicidal lunatics.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've never heard of, this is the first drug that I've read so much about that changes somebody to this degree. Now, I do know, years ago, I worked in restaurants, and almost every waitress I worked with snorted cocaine because
wow.
Most of them worked around the clock. You know, most of them worked two jobs, and some of them even had children, and to keep on going, they do coke so that they could stay awake. And a lot of them used it for weight loss as well, because you get so hyper that, you know, you don't care whether you eat. So they
right.
would drink Diet Coke or Diet Pepsi and snort Coke and work two or three different waitress jobs. Sometimes it took them all through the night, and sometimes they would go from a sedate dinner restaurant into a rock club and you know, spend the night listening to rock and roll music and waiting on table for drinks and stuff like that, and they'd go around the clock. What would happen to them? I never saw anybody get violent. What they got was paranoid. So,
right. Well, no, I'm
so
heroin.
Paranoid.
Talking about mm-hmm. heroin, though.
Well, heroin is what I understand. Heroin is what oxycodone is. And when they talk about heroin use here in Florida, they're talking about oxycodone. And it's made from the poppy seed, just like heroin. And but it's also got chemicals in it. But it is, let me read this real quick. It's a semi-synthetic opiate, I can't even say that word this morning, opiate, synthesized from poppy-derived thebaine. It is narcotic, algesic, generally indicated for relief of moderate to severe pain. It was originated to help with cancer pain. It
Are you talking about heroin or cocaine?
I'm talking about oxycodone, which is a derivative of heroin. One of the several new semi-synthetic opiates is an attempt to improve on the existing opiates. Oxycodone is available in a single-ingredient medication, an immediate release and controlled release. Combination products formulated with non-narcotic ingredients such as NSAIDs and paracetamol and acetophen are also available as immediate release formulations. Now, when Joey, my brother, first got cancer, he was given oxycodone and Oxycontin. One is long release, one is immediate release. And I remember I was having a migraine. We were out shopping. I said, Joe, I have to sit here because it was one of those migraines that makes you feel like you're going to throw up. You know, I know you're familiar with those. And I sat back in the car, and I put my head back, and Joey said, here, take half of this. It's not going to hurt you, Rainey, and handed me one of his oxycodones. But he broke it in half. So I said, I don't really want to take it. But my head, I couldn't have even driven, and Joey couldn't drive. So I took it. We walked into the store after a couple minutes, and I got down the first aisle. I got so violently ill, I had to come running out of the store. I puked all over the parking lot. I had to go sit in the car. He had to sit there, and he went in and got himself a cup of coffee in the Winn-Dixie and sat there while I, like, dozed for a few minutes just to get some order back to my body. And I never... Even today, even after serious back pain years ago, the strongest thing I would ever take was like a Percocet or something like that. And Percocet is a derivative of the same stuff. It's just not as potent. But all of these things, are deadly. They're deadly, deadly. But they were designed for good reasons. Oxycodone was for palliative care. Morphine today is one of the most used pain control medications there is. It's got good stuff. This bath salt, though, I don't understand how anybody could mistake it for something that is going to be fun or good, or have any use that it serves us in any way, shape, or form. So my question is, again, why the hell haven't they taken it at least out of the places where it can be so easily purchased and not controlled in any way, shape, or form? What's to stop a 12-year-old that looks like he's 19 from going in and buying that? There probably isn't anything.
And that's very scary because you don't even know you don't even know what to look for. I mean, how would you just know looking at something that it's a drug and that it's not something that's really recreational for the kids?
Well, I mean, the pictures that they showed on the website are like I just said, like the magical ponies, pastel colors, really pretty granulation, nice packaging with pretty little pictures on it and everything. I mean, it looks like I can even see a grandmother who's not up to date saying, "Oh, you want some of this, honey? It says it's good and it'll keep you relaxed. You're antsy, you know, because this is going on." I can see a grandparent not understanding what she's purchasing, but the presentation, you know, and not everybody reads all the labels like we preach all the time, and not everybody pays attention to what they're doing. If it's for sale, a lot of people are of the mindset, then it must be okay.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they wouldn't let
them
put it out here.
Up to them, and it's got a little, you know, like you said, it's got a butterfly or a pony on it. I say, "Mom, can I have this?" "Oh, yeah, sure. Just put it in the cart," and the parent doesn't even look at it.
Yep. That's the truth. That is the truth, and that's the sad truth.
One of the things we had on the show the other night, Philip Seymour Hoffman, he's a actor. He was on the Hunger Games and some of these movies recently. He just died of a heroin overdose. That's how prevalent now.
But, you know, he also, there's some, I don't know if it's conjecture or whether there's some basis to it, but he withdrew a certain amount of money, and he had all that stuff in his apartment in Manhattan, and they actually think he was, planning something. They're not out and out saying, "Oh, he was trying to kill himself. He was trying to do this. He was trying to do that." But I mean, I don't know, 50, 60 bags of. You know, and the fact that he made all these withdrawals at different ATMs, 1,200 and 1,200 and 1,200, so that he could pay cash for all that kind of stuff. So he must have been planning something. And, of course, as we've talked about this a lot of times, people who are in that arena, actors, are very special people, and their gifts often make them, prone to deep thoughts, dark thoughts, places that the rest of us don't usually go because they are just so, and he's one of them. I've always felt that way about him. He's not a pretty boy. He's not a funny man. He's a deep actor. He's one of those kind of actors, like when he did Capote, he was like immersed. I believe he was Capote. You know, I mean, that's just who he is. So,
that
was very sad.
And evidently, he's been battling drug addiction his entire life. He said that he likes the way he feels when he's on something. I mean, he admitted that in one of the interviews. But it's he really was a great talent. And it's like when you hear things like this, it's nothing short of a tragedy.
It's like Chris Farley and John Belushi and all those men. They were like so entertaining, but they had to be somebody else to be that person.
That's right.
You know. So we're just about out of time. I'm welcoming any feedback anybody has to tell me or share with us. I think that this is a big issue, and because it's on the ground floor, maybe we still have an opportunity to stomp all over it before it gets any bigger. And I do think that that's some place that we need to go and a stand that we need to take. I also want to send our love and our support out to the family of Michael Maroney and again to Jahai, the other little girl that's out there in some place that's unknown, still in that limbo, if you will. And wish you all a great day. It's a little bit cooler here in South Florida, but you poor folks up in the northern part of our world, oh, my good God, you probably will never wear anything white again because of all the snow this winter. So everybody have a great day, though. Go out and make it your best. God bless, and we'll be back tomorrow with a recap day. So if you have anything that you want to say about any of the shows we did this week, call in and share it. You can call in at 347-989-0352. Bye-bye, everybody. Thanks, Shell. You want to say goodbye?
Yes. Bye, Renee. Bye, everyone. Have a wonderful day.
Bye-bye.